You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So protests across the country are focused on rolling back stay-at-home orders that are meant to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Here in Wisconsin, thousands of people have RSVP'd on Facebook and are expected to gather in protest at the state capitol later this afternoon. Could potentially be the largest gathering so far in a nationwide series of protests against stay-at-home restrictions. Are you planning to protest today against the governor's stay-at-home order? How long do you think the stay-at-home order should last? Do you support the governor's extension of the order to May 26th? Join in 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief and co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. Hi, Sean. Welcome back.
Good morning.
So earlier this week, Republican legislators sued Governor Evers' administration, asking the state Supreme Court to overturn the stay-at-home order. What are Republicans asking the court to do?
They are asking the court to find that the stay-at-home extension specifically was beyond the governor's administration's powers. So they're focused really specifically on that, not some of the other emergency orders that you've seen Governor Evers issue during the pandemic. Those were issued under a different law. They're focused on the stay-at-home order that was issued by DHS Secretary Andrea Palm under powers given to her agency to manage communicable diseases. They say that, you know, that was beyond her authority, and that essentially that the legislature should have been involved in the crafting of that order.
So this suit is more about overreach than anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely about the power of the executive branch, which is kind of a common argument we've had between the Republican legislature and the Democratic governor, is, you know, which agency has the appropriate level of power. Even before Evers, came into office, this was a discussion that was happening. And so, go ahead, sorry.
Who exactly is part of the lawsuit? Is it all Republican lawmakers?
The way that it works is the lawsuit says it's filed by the legislature, but the legislature is run by Republicans, and so it's Republican leaders who decide when to do something like this. They essentially control, they not only control the bodies, they also control the ability of the legislature to, you know, use its funding to pay for attorneys to file a lawsuit against the governor.
And so regardless of how a particular Republican lawmaker may feel about the extension of the orders to May 26th, they are part of this suit as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get technical about it, every legislator, Democrat and Republican, is part of it. But it's a decision that was made by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. They've been calling the decisions on all this stuff.
How soon might the Supreme Court make a decision?
So this is kind of a key point because, you know, we remember what happened on April 6th, right before Wisconsin's April 7th election. Governor Evers issued an emergency order to postpone the election. And that happened early in the afternoon on April 6th. About 4 hours later, the state Supreme Court had struck him down. So that's how fast they can move when they want to. In this case, they are not moving that fast. So, you know, the stay-at-home order, as far as we know, unless something really unusual would happen, the stay-at-home extension that's being challenged is going to take effect this morning. The Supreme Court has given until next week, next Thursday, for briefs to be filed in the case. So they set that schedule and gave parties, they gave the Department of Health Services until next Tuesday to respond to this lawsuit. And they gave until the 30th for the legislature to respond to that. Beyond that, we don't have a schedule. They could, in theory, rule any time after that. But it does go to show that the court is willing to let this order stay in effect for, you know, roughly a week after it takes effect.
We're talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief. We're looking at the rising tension, the litigation over the Safer at Home order that restricts movements to try to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Are you planning to protest today against the governor's stay-at-home order? What concerns you about it? If you are against the stay-at-home order, what restrictions do you think are appropriate during this pandemic? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Alice now, joining us from Sheboygan. Hi, Alice.
Hi. I am absolutely for the stay-at-home order. I've looked at the statistics across the nation, and where there's density, where people are getting together, there's so many problems, and I have family in the medical field, and I absolutely agree with Governor Evers.
Alice, thank you for calling in. Sean, what restrictions do Republicans most want to see lifted or changed here? Oh, and I think we're having difficulty getting Sean here on the phone. We are talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. We're looking at the litigation over the Safer at Home order that restricts movements to try to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Are you joining the protests today? Do you plan to be in Madison at the Capitol? What do you think is spurring the protest on? Is it genuine anxiety over the economy, or do you believe the protesters are being encouraged by President Trump or other figures? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Sean, which restrictions do Republicans most want to see lifted or changed here?
Sorry about the
That's okay. Dropped off the call there earlier.
Yeah,
no problem.
So they are not in this lawsuit saying, here's what the case should be, you know, here's what stay at home should look like instead. They have, though, said pretty regularly now for a couple weeks that they want to see more of a regional approach to stay at home. So they're saying that stay at home should not take effect all over the state for every county, regardless of how many COVID-19 cases you have. A lot of lawmakers in the assembly represent smaller counties that have a smaller number of COVID-19 cases, and they say, therefore, they shouldn't be forced to stay at home when this is a problem that is felt, more acutely in places like Milwaukee County or Dane County.
Or Brown County, for that matter. We've seen an outbreak in the Green Bay area.
For sure. That has been, especially this week, that has been the county that we're watching. And, the governor's response to that idea of a regional approach has, not been favorable. He basically says that, this is the virus isn't going to respect county borders, and that you may have a smaller number of cases in some of those smaller counties, but they also have a smaller healthcare system to deal with it. Should they actually get COVID-19 cases?
We're talking about the stay-at-home order, protesters, what the scene of the Capitol may look like today. Sean Johnson is WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. So what do you think is encouraging the protests? Are you concerned that the protests might spread the coronavirus further, or do you defend the right to protest even if you don't agree with the cause? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Sean Johnson right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the protests that are erupting around the country, the litigation here in Wisconsin over stay-at-home orders. Last week, Governor Evers announced he was extending his most restrictive order until May 26, one that requires people to stay home as much as possible. Thousands of protesters, meanwhile, could march on the Capitol today as they defy the order and call attention to wanting to reopen businesses sooner. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief, and he stays with us. Let's take another call now. Jesse is with us from Madison. Hi, Jesse.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I just wanted to call in and kind of point out that I feel this is a really perfect example of something called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which kind of defines that people with really limited knowledge or expertise on a certain subject feel that they have enough knowledge to have a strong opinion and kind of refute the recommendations of experts. I'm a physician here working and living in Madison, and I'm just really disheartened to see this trend across the country. I think it is politically motivated. I think we're seeing that this is funded by conservative efforts in other states, and it's just really disheartening to see the lack of trust in science and public health. Thank you.
Jesse, thank you for calling in. Sean, what do we know about what is spurring this on? Who are behind the protests?
I mean, the protests, there's a lot of people who are interested in the protests. And I mean, Republicans in high places who have said that they kind of are having a hand in this protest. I think we'll know more today about how much this was funded from sort of the top down, and how much it is, you know, kind of a gathering of people that's more loosely organized. You know, some of the people who have been organizing this in Madison have told other news outlets that they are not looking for, you know, outside funding on this stuff. But when it comes to big protests, that's usually the way they go. I mean, if you think back about the Tea Party protests leading up to the 2010 election, yeah, there were citizens out there who were protesting their government, and it's something that they felt strongly about. But those protests were funded by big groups. I mean, they had a pretty strong financial backing from those outside groups. And so I think we're still learning in this case what Wisconsin's protest is going to look like. I mean, we do know that, you know, Stephen Moore, an economic advisor to President Trump, one of the founders of the Club for Growth, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. I mean, he's got a long Republican resume. He was saying just last week that he was working with a group on Wisconsin's protest and that he had found a big donor. He didn't mention the person by name who said that they would pay for the bail for anybody who got arrested as part of this protest.
Well, let's take another call. David is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to comment on?
Okay, I just wanted to quick touch on a couple of points. Firstly, I think that while it is important to exercise your First Amendment right and protest against things you disagree with, it is also important to realize that you don't necessarily have to be at the state capitol to voice that opinion, and it might not be safe in a situation like this. Secondly, I would just like to play devil's advocate and say, as soon as this coronavirus situation came down, the protests in Hong Kong, which had been very focused around human rights and the courts there, were more or less shut down, yet the Chinese government still pursued arresting organizers. So, you know, a lot of things up in the air here. Important to keep rights in mind.
David, thank you for the call. Sean, do we know how police will be handling the situation this afternoon?
So there's a couple of police forces, I guess, that you would want to keep an eye on in this situation, potentially three. You have the protest is actually taking place on the state capitol grounds. And normally to do that, a group that's going to be a large group needs to get a permit from the Department of Administration. The Department of Administration oversees the state capitol police force. So there's that. The Department of Administration answers to Governor Tony Evers. I guess so we'll have to watch how they handle the protest. Governor Evers has been kind of downplaying it, though. He's not saying we're going to crack down on this. He's saying that he does not expect Capitol Police to be out there enforcing social distancing. So that's sort of what we heard from the governor. He's not the chief of the Capitol Police, but he runs state government, which you know, is the Department of Administration, which runs the Capitol Police, and that's the guidance that they're getting from the top. There's also Madison's police force, city police, and the mayor of Madison told the New York Times in an article yesterday that she was not going to use city police to try to disperse protesters. I think her words were something along the lines of the protest was designed to get attention and it had gotten too much already. So that's where she stands on it. I mean, you could in theory potentially, I suppose, have county police there. I haven't heard them weigh in on how they're going to handle the situation. But you haven't heard a warning anyway from police that if you gather here in violation of the stay-at-home order, that we're going to arrest you.
We're talking with Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. We're looking at the protests that are erupting here in Wisconsin and also the litigation over stay-at-home orders. Your questions still welcome, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Bill now in Milwaukee. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, everybody. I don't have all the specific data, but I believe back in 1918, I think it was in Philadelphia, there was a big annual parade that the people would not let go of during the Spanish flu epidemic. And after that, there was a huge spike in infection and death because all of these people gathered. It was impossible to keep true social distance in a crowd like that. I don't know what these people could be thinking.
Bill, thank you for the call. Bill, bringing up the historical context of this. And Sean, I want to ask you about some history here as well. The protests you're seeing today, does that remind you at all of 2011 and the Act 10 protests, perhaps?
I think protests during a pandemic probably won't remind me of anything because, you know, we haven't seen a large crowd like this. Or I haven't seen a large crowd like this in Wisconsin for a while now. And so I think the circumstances are pretty different. And so even if the crowd is not as large, and most crowds are not as large as the protests we saw in Act 10, I think it's going to probably feel pretty large because it's certainly going to be more than 10 people is the impression I get. They had, before the public access to the Facebook page was taken down, there were some 16,000 people who said they were interested. I think 3,000 had said they were going. You know, those numbers could have gone up after I last saw it. If you're comparing it to what happened like a decade ago, you know, the Act 10 protests would have had, they were having like 10,000 people on a regular basis, around 100,000 at their peak. So I don't expect them to be that large, certainly.
Will there be any access for people, say, to use amenities like the bathroom? The Capitol itself is closed, as are businesses around the Capitol. So people won't have things like bathrooms.
Yeah, they won't. And I mean, I saw one of the organizers saying that something about how they had secured bathrooms. You know, presumably portable, but they don't have access to the Capitol. You're right. There are some businesses around the square, potentially that are open. There's, but I don't know. Yeah, that could create a very dangerous situation for their workers, frankly, if people are lining up in there. So.
Well, let's switch gears here for a moment. Looking back at the spring election, the state health department now says 19 people who either voted or worked the polls that day have come down with COVID-19. What has been the reaction that you've heard from lawmakers to this?
I guess a couple things. When you're talking about Republican lawmakers, they have, I guess, pointed out that the DHS, and the DHS has also said this too, that because they can't exactly guarantee that those people got this at the polls. They are people who were at the polls, either as voters or as poll workers. And it's something that we know that the state is watching, but I don't believe that the DHS has come out to this point and said, yes, we've pinpointed this as as the moment when this happened. And then I guess the other thing that I've seen from Republicans, at least their Republican chairman of the Elections Commission, Dean Knutson, a former GOP state lawmaker, has said that if you look at the number of people who they have identified so far, you know, and based on the number of people who were at the polls, that the rate of infection was not higher than you're seeing, you know, just through community spread of COVID-19.
Sean, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. Coming up, we talk with two educators about how parents can help prevent their kids from falling behind in school during the pandemic. Let us know what issues you're dealing with during this homeschooling. I'll tell you my issues. We'll talk about the situation right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a quick mention here that as the impact of COVID-19 grows in Wisconsin, our WPR reporters are stationed around the state to bring you the latest news and developments. You can find a hive of information and ask your questions at WPR.org/COVID. Right now, we're talking about homeschooling those kids. Schools are currently not operating anywhere in the country. At least 41 states have extended their statewide school closures through the remainder of the school year, including Wisconsin. So parents, how are you getting through this? What routines have been working for you? Where are you struggling? What resources have you found to be helpful to keep the learning going? We're at 800-642-1234. Becky Wojahn is the library media specialist at Memorial High School in Eau Claire. She's worked in libraries from preschool to college levels, and she writes children's books under the pen name W.H. Beck. Becky, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Caroline Akervik is here as well, library media coordinator for the Eau Claire Area School District, and previously she was an elementary school library media specialist. She's also the author of several middle grade and young adult novels. Caroline, welcome back to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
So I understand you two have really put together this vast array of resources, and we're going to pick through them during our time together, but before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about the frustration and about the expectations that we parents are feeling right now, because it is really hard to keep this learning going. Caroline, what can you say about that?
Well, I think parents have to alter their expectations about what they think should happen with their child at home. For example, you're not going to be able to recreate a traditional school day at home, and you shouldn't expect to. You should realize that this is a very unique time, and we have to be more flexible. I mean, you can't schedule, okay, at 8:15 we're going to be doing math, at 12 o'clock we're going to be doing our science activity. Instead, we have to look at the day kind of differently and have different expectations for our kids.
Becky, what about you? What is recommended? What's manageable right now for doing the schooling from home?
Well, I think, I think Caroline's right. You know, this is new for all of us, and not just parents, you know, teaching their kids in their house, but it's kids have never done it before, and teachers have never done it before. School districts have never done this before. So everybody's kind of figuring out what's appropriate. I think it's really important, like Caroline said, that, you know, it's not going to look like a typical school day. Right now, the Eau Claire School District's recommending for high schoolers about an hour and a half of learning per week. So if you think about that, it's about 2.5 hours a day of learning that they're expected to do. And that's because we know that kids and families, they have a lot of other stuff on their plate right now. So I think just kind of loosening up those expectations a little bit, being flexible. Most kids can't sit still for, you know, more than 15, 20 minutes. They need a change of gears. So just being aware of that and working with your kids is going to solve a little bit of frustration, I think.
Caroline, remember before the pandemic when we were seeing those reports from education researchers saying, you know, we've structured too much time in our kids' day, too much, you know, from soccer to piano to karate to this to that. They don't have enough unstructured time. And I've been thinking about that research and laughing and thinking, well, now they've got it and we're watching it.
Exactly. And I think, well, you know, it's obviously not a blessing, but it is a moment to kind of catch our breaths. And that's how we have to look at it. And, you know, Becky and I were talking about this a little bit, and it's a really special time where kids can pursue an interest because they have the time to. And I also think teachers understand and schools understand kids aren't going to come back in the fall as if they had been through a usual school year. So teachers are going to meet your kids where they are. And we don't need to worry about shoving in all the content and expecting our kid to reach, you know, the usual year-end goals. That's just not realistic, because when they come back, hopefully in the fall, the teachers will have adjusted their expectations and prepare to lead your child or teach your child to grow so that they can, you know, achieve the learning that they need to.
Well, let's look at some of these both online and offline type learning experiences. Caroline, you know, not everyone has reliable broadband access or even reliable internet. So what are some learning resources that really don't require being online and on the internet?
Well, I think there are a lot of activities that just go on at the home that provide learning opportunities. For example, cooking as a math lesson. I know that I've seen several math coaches put on videos on Facebook and things like that of cooking, you know, reading the ingredients, measuring things out, looking at the cost of the items used to prepare a certain meal or a treat, you know, depends on the situation. So cooking is a great opportunity for teaching. Board games. We've played more board games than I think we have in a decade at my home. And it really is a great learning opportunity. I mean, you think about cribbage, old school games like that, Risk, Monopoly. These are all opportunities to play with math. In addition, crafts that we haven't explored in a long time, drawing, crocheting, knitting. Becky, I think the outdoors, the journaling piece, would you like to share on that?
Yeah, that's something that I'm really interested in and that I personally like. But this is a great time. You know, in my family, we've been counting as one of our blessings that at least this didn't happen during the winter time. And, you know, being able to go outside and just kind of keep a journal of observations of what's happening in your yard or your park or out your window. And John Muir Laws does some nature journaling, and he's actually putting on, this is an online opportunity, but he's doing videos a few times a week to kind of get kids and people going. It's not just a kid thing, really. But just kind of having, you know, kids slow down and observe and draw what they see and notice what's changed, record the weather. There's a lot of really interesting opportunities you can do.
Yeah, sidewalk chalk, a lot of that can come in handy right now as well.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, we're playing a ton of Boggle at our house. And let me tell you, I'm getting creamed suddenly, because the more we play, the better the kids get.
Exactly. We had a marathon three-night Risk session. I'm not going to say it ended well, but it was a lot of fun.
And we've been doing lots and lots of puzzles, which, you know, is a whole different kind of learning of that spatial awareness and, you know, different observation skills. So, yeah, just taking time. And then as parents, knowing that that's learning, you know, that's okay to spend time doing that. And even though it's not called schoolwork, it's, you know, spending that time with your kid or having your kid work on that while you work on your work is totally okay.
We're talking with educators and library media specialists Caroline Akravic and Becky Wojan. They're helping us through the many online, the offline, at-home learning resources. And students, we want to hear from you. How is your learning going? Are you struggling to stay focused at home? Have you been doing projects or reading? How have you passed the time? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Richard now in Two Rivers. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on the air.
Sure.
Yeah, I have a comment, and I'll take the answer offline, and I'll make it quick. I agree with everything your experts are saying, except for the fact the reality is I have friends that have worked in factories, and now they're home with their children, and they're online trying to find it, follow a curriculum that generous teachers are putting forth. And sometimes the curriculum is not an hour and a half a week. Sometimes it's like 6 hours a day, and they have to do this, this, and this, and they can't keep up. They don't know what to do. And that's all I need to say.
Richard, thank you so much for bringing that up. And Richard, I think is hitting on something that is really important to say, is that there is a lot of information, a lot of logins, a lot of emails coming our way as parents. Caroline, first, how should we be responding to this?
Well, I do have a child. I have a child in high school still, and I'm seeing it. But one thing, first of all, I appreciate your comments, Richard, and they're right on. Teachers aren't really initially, I mean, this is all new to many of our teachers who haven't been, have never had to teach online before. And so I think initially the teachers were struggling to figure out how much time is appropriate. I have children in college level courses. They found that their work and the amount of time that they're actually spending doing, you know, in-class activities has exploded exponentially. And that's, again, because teachers are learning too. So my suggestion would be, if you're experiencing a situation where your child is spending way too long on the computer, attempting to get their schoolwork done, reach out to that teacher, explain, it is too much right now. And the teachers will understand because they're learning too.
Becky, do you want to jump in here as well?
Yeah, I agree. I think the instinct, well, for all of us in education is, you know, we want to do something. So it looks like right now putting out more and more information and trying to connect with kids in so many different ways. And that can be really overwhelming for parents and families and kids as well. I agree with Caroline. If it's an unmanageable thing, I would reach out to the teacher. Most educators at this time are trying to be as flexible as possible. We know situations are strange and scary and unusual for every family. And so most people will work with a family and figure out what's a good balance. So, and that's good feedback too, because sometimes as a teacher, when you're putting stuff online, you don't really know how long it's going to take. You don't realize that just the logging in part took 20 minutes instead of the lesson, you know. So getting that feedback will be valuable for those teachers as well.
We're talking with library media professionals in Eau Claire. We have Becky Wojan with us, Caroline Akrovic. So teachers, let's hear from you. How are you adapting to this all virtual teaching world? What resources have you found to work for your students? How are you encouraging them in this situation? And can you reach all of your students? Have you been able to be part of this? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. By the way, we have a list of all the resources that we're discussing here and more at WPR.org/mornings. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. The morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about homeschooling amid this pandemic. And I will level with you. Most days I feel frustrated. I feel overwhelmed to try to provide distance learning for kids in multiple grades, all at different stages of learning. And the teachers in my school, they are incredible. They're working so hard, and I feel like I need to put in the same amount of effort. But to keep up with all the learning apps and the logins and the video meetups and emailed assignments, it's hard to keep track, to stay on top of it. So parents, how is it going for you? Reach out, let us know, 800-642-1234. We have Becky Wojan, a library media specialist at Memorial High School in Eau Claire, Caroline Akrovic, library media coordinator for the Eau Claire Area School District, and they stay with us. Let's bring in another call. Now Merlin is joining us from Oak Creek. Hi, Merlin.
Good morning. I'm getting myself ready for work, so somebody may have covered this topic before when I put my phone down, but I had to disagree with some of your people on the show about oh, this is all so new and what are we going to do type of thing. There's a whole lot of people in the state of Wisconsin that homeschool their kids all the time. Why can't they, you know, isn't there some kind of an organization of these homeschool parents that you could contact and see what they do, all, you know, 12 months out of the year?
Merlin, very good point. Caroline, we could look to the homeschooling population out there in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's Merlin's point is excellent. However, the teachers who are experiencing challenges and the families who are experiencing challenges haven't always used the homeschool model. We also do have virtual schools, but those teachers who teach in virtual schools have been trained and have learned the skills to teach in that model. What's challenging now is we have teachers and families who are having to teach in these in a very different environment, an at-home learning environment, which they had not expected or anticipated, and they had to learn to do it really fast after the middle of March.
Let's bring in Paula now in Neillsville with thoughts on this. Hi, Paula.
Hi.
Hi,
yeah,
how are you?
Actually,
go ahead.
Yeah, I just actually had a question. Good morning, ladies. About the parents that are still essential workers and going to work their normal 8 hours, and maybe some advice that you would have for, you know, parents who have those high school students that are sitting at home trying to do this by themselves, really. My kids go to a school district and they're not even using any anything like Zoom or anything to keep them engaged. They're just having them do pretty much everything by themselves. So it does concern me.
Paula, thank you. Becky, can I start with you?
Yeah. Well, I think again, I would always just kind of keep that open line of communication with the teachers and let them know your situation, because I know with my own, I have some library assistant students, and I have keep telling them, like, I can't know what's happening and what you need unless you communicate it, because I don't have any body language or facial expressions, you know, to tell you, you know, to let me know if you're overwhelmed or not. So just keeping that open. But I also think this kind of goes back to what we were saying, too, is it's okay if their day just looks a lot different, you know. Of course, we want to keep them going on the classes and make sure that they're checking in with their teachers every day. But it's also okay if they just read a book for a little bit of the day, and that, and we count that as learning, because it certainly is. But yeah, it's a tricky time right now. And I think mostly just kind of keeping that communication with the school and let them know that, you know, my kids are home all day and we're doing the best we can. And that'll go a long way.
Caroline, you know, we've been hearing, too, that teens will never be the same.
Well, I've heard that also, and I do have teens. What has given me some comfort is I was reading about the children of Katrina, the children who were impacted by that terrible tragedy, and many of them ended up being out of school for extended periods of time as well. And those children, from what I understand, ended up academically eventually, you know, it takes time to catch up, but they ended up doing fine. And that kind of gives me comfort, because I do think children are resilient. People are resilient. So I guess, again, it comes back to that same theme of take a breath, pause. The kids will get there. There's no finish line they have to get to academically. We just have to be patient with it and help them emerge as unscathed as possible.
Well, Caroline, let's switch gears here for a moment and look at what libraries can do. There is now curbside pickup for libraries, but what can they offer our kids?
Well, actually, the governor has approved curbside pickup, but not all public libraries in the state of Wisconsin have implemented it yet because of safety concerns for their workers. So until that piece kind of gets worked out, right now we're looking at the digital resources available. And so it's ebooks and audiobooks. And though not everyone may choose it as their preference to read on a device, that's kind of where we are right now. And so Overdrive, Sora, and Libby, these are excellent resources available through many school districts as well as through the public library system in Wisconsin, which allow you to check out ebooks, audiobooks, and listening to reading is as good as reading. There's Freeding, there's Hoopla. Tumble Books is a fabulous resource with talking picture books, read-along chapter books, nonfiction books, and I think they also have graphic novels. Isn't that correct, Becky?
Yes, they do.
And then Team Book Cloud, these are all resources we've listed in the document we shared, and these are resources that kids can access on a device so that they can continue to grow as readers and learners.
Yeah, and we also have this at WPR.org/mornings with all these resources. Becky, what about podcasts? What do you see there?
Well, I love listening to podcasts. You know, audiobooks are fantastic, but what's great about podcasts is they come in little bite-sized chunks. And so you don't necessarily have to have that like continuation from day to day. And so that can be a great way to learn about science and history and all sorts of different resources. We've got some listed on your website, but like, for example, some that I love, there's one called Stuff You Missed in History Class, and it's just little known stories from history for teen audiences. And yeah, it might not be the exact curriculum that your teen is learning about, but, you know, they're still connecting to that kind of broader world and you know, what events happened in history. There's a book club for kids, which is, I love it. It's tweens discussing a middle grade book. And so they have like three different kids from around the country talk about books they love. And then on the website, those particular kids also post their favorite book. So just kind of another way for kids to kind of connect with other kids and hear, you know, what they're reading and, you know, hear about a book they might be interested in. There's all sorts of science ones, you know, from Science Friday, which is one of my favorites, to younger ones. There's one called Brains On, which is
that's a good one. Yep.
Yeah.
Wow in the world. Uh-huh. Yep. There's a lot of them out there.
That can be a great one. Like maybe Thursdays are, you know, or after lunch you listen to a podcast or, you know, it's, you can set up a schedule kind of that way too with a little bit more downtime stuff as well. And that's a great way for learning.
Well, John from Brown Deer called in, couldn't stay with us and wanted to share that students had all sorts of hands-on materials during his education, Lincoln Logs, model ships. And John says students were always absorbed with something in front of them rather than looking at screens and the internet, and was, you know, is kind of concerned that we should be cutting down on screen time. So what do you make of that, Caroline? How can we cut down on screen time?
Well, I think that given the circumstances right now, some screen time is to be expected. But I think there are lots of opportunities for hands-on learning. You know, I think about how my children grew up. And yes, you know, again, Becky had referred to puzzles. My youngest son loved setting up army guys. He built elaborate battles. My kids built forts with cushions, couch cushions in the living room. Pretend creative play is excellent. And it's really critical for our youngest learners. So yes, there are all sorts of opportunities in your home to do hands-on learning activities, making goop, you know, all sorts of activities that the kids can learn absolutely with their hands and not have screen time. But right now, I think there is kind of a balance that in order to stay connected with school in some situations, yes, there is some screen time involved. And that kind of brings me, I would like to bring up the whole virtual field trip piece. That is a really cool opportunity. We are, you know, kind of stuck at home, and virtual field trips allow us to see and explore the world while we're at home.
Yeah, like Smithsonian, so many cool ones out there. Thank you both so much for joining us and sharing your resources.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Becky Wojahn, Library Media Specialist at Memorial High School in Eau Claire. Caroline Akrovic serves as the Library Media Coordinator for the Eau Claire Area School District. All of those resources and more can be found at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Mornings Show. Stay with us. You're listening to the Ideas Network.